Welcome to Crossing Broadcast on a Thursday, April 26th, the year of our Lord, 2024. We pushed the show a day. Why? Why, Russ? Is it because you hate the people? Is it because you hate Ford? Is it because you hate the commenters on YouTube? Are you trying to get away from them? Are you trying to hide? Why would you push the show a day? All right, everybody put on your thinking caps, because we had some people yesterday who were like, I can't believe this shit. Why is Cross Broadcast supposed to be on a Thursday? You guys said Monday, Thursday. Think. Put on that thinking cap or the tinfoil hat. Could it maybe have been because we knew that on Thursday, the Sixers were going to play the Knicks in game three. The Eagles had a draft pick to make. Maybe some hilarity would ensue with one of the other teams in town, and it made more sense to put the show on a Friday. Indeed, that is what happened. So here we are on a Friday, and I say we, because it's not just me, and it's not just Craig making $385,000 on the other side of the glass on the ones and twos. Nay, nay, joining me today, you've read him on Crossing Broad, the smartest man who writes for the website, Tim Riley's here. Tim, how are you?
Hey, Russ. That was nice of you to say.
I say what's true. We speak the truth on Crossing Broadcast.
I'm trying to wonder how much of a compliment it is.
To be the smartest guy at the site? That's pretty good. I'd say it's at least a pretty decent enough compliment.
Do you think Phil's listening right now? Really upset?
Phil hasn't written for the site in so long. I mean, he's tangentially affiliated, but, you know, Connor Allen, very smart, by the way, on YouTube. I'm a whole day late instead of 2 minutes. That's right. As a matter of fact, though, I'm looking at a two-minute timer here, and I'm looking at 12:02 on my clock, and I'm pretty sure that means that we started the show on time today. So you know what, Tim? Here's to you, and here's all to the wonderful people who check in live on YouTube and Facebook, and also over on whatchamacallit, on Twitter, on X. I did see a thing about there being a potential issue with Facebook pages today, which maybe is why we don't see Ford complaining in the comments section yet. I guess it remains to be seen if the show will make it there, but if it doesn't, we're at least on a few other platforms, so that's why we go to more than just one. But Rico says, let me fill in for Ford today. Sixers will not win the series, called it 4 years ago. I want to get into the Sixers game because I think that obviously people are really excited about the Eagles pick, and I think that we would be doing a disservice if we didn't at least touch on that a bit. But Tim, I don't think you and I were like poring over a ton of college highlights in preparation of this draft. Neither you nor I put together a big board. This isn't like the first version of Crossing Broadcast where Lefko was getting paid all day to watch film and do this kind of a breakdown. I think we can look at this maybe more from like a macro perspective, to borrow from Kevin Kincaid. But like, what if we looked at this big picture and we just had some quick takeaways on the Eagles pick, what they might target this weekend, and then we'll dive into some absolutely batshit stuff that happened before the Sixers game, during the Sixers game, and after the Sixers game. Why don't we get into the draft? A big
Russ,
night.
I don't want to bury the lead, though. You need to comment on Tony Khan kayfabing that injury.
Craig, sure you need to, yeah, Craig has to pull it up. Craig, look up Tony Khan, K-H-A-N, on the Twitter. So, fine. We'll go here for a second. So, the Jaguars, they go to the war room on the NFL Network, and then Pat McAfee touched it on his show, but I don't think he showed him live. I think it was the thing that they touched on later in their telecast. But Tony Khan, who is one of the owners, his dad, Shad Khan, multi-billionaire, owns the Jacksonville Jaguars, owns Fulham over in England, and then, of course, owns AEW, All Elite Wrestling. Tony Khan's part of an angle on Wednesday. He takes a Meltzer driver. He gets punched in the gut by a returning Jack Perry. But he takes his Meltzer driver, which is essentially an assisted pile driver. One of the Young Bucks flips off the top rope. Okay. Tony Khan's never been involved in physicality on his show before in 4 or 5 years. And he shows up to the NFL draft, and kayfabe is still alive in pro wrestling. It's still alive. Craig, I'm going to pull it up now. There's Tony Khan in the war room. This is what they showed on the NFL Network. Tony Khan wearing a neck brace. Kayfabe is very much alive, baby. Tim, your thoughts on Tony Khan with the neck brace?
I mean, it was brilliant. It reminded me of that Andy Kaufman, Jerry Lawler angle from, I mean, it was before, I think it was before we were born, Russ, but you know, we can watch the past, we can see the videos from before. I love that era of wrestling when people thought it was real and you could go on like the David Letterman show and, you know, basically sell a story and people would believe it. You know, a lot of that's gone now in wrestling, which is, there's so many smarks now who know
that's right.
Seen behind the curtain and, they're part of the storyline almost. And there's a mystique to professional wrestling that's kind of still funny. And I love the terminology too. I said kayfabe earlier, but the heel baby face. I want to talk a little bit about heels when we get into Joel Embiid as well, playing the heel.
We'll make sure that we touch on it, but Tony Khan doing it it's like next level. It's hilarious. A lot of people don't like Tony Khan in the internet wrestling community. It's a very torn thing, very tribalistic, because people are absolutely fucking stupid. I'm in Facebook groups because I used to go into them sometimes to spread the word about It's Just Wrestling, everybody's 10th favorite pro wrestling podcast. And I just learned that there are just a lot of really dumb people who really do buy into it, though, Tim. Like, there are people who you can tell just really think that it's 100% real. The action in the ring is real. These guys do act, and women do get hurt. There is, like, actual toll that it takes on their body. But anyway, Tony Khan, neck brace to the draft. Fantastic stuff. Pat McAfee called out the fact that he was kind of looking side to side, which, if you're going to commit to the bit, you got to kind of stay stationary and rotate the shoulders. But we're gonna take it. It's okay.
Pay for effort. He took a bump, man. That's what we call it in the business. Take a bump.
Wait till we find out that you were actually.
I wrestled in high school. I did wrestle in high school. So
it was amateur wrestling, though, right? It was full Nelsons and.
Well, no, full Nelsons are illegal in amateur wrestling.
Are they? How about half Nelson? Is a half Nelson allowed? Nelson
is perfectly legal.
What if you fight against a person, a Siamese twin? Then it's a full Nelson.
I never had the pleasure, but I'm sure. Yeah, then you should be allowed. But full Nelsons are illegal.
So we somehow sidetracked this entire show into a wrestling discussion.
I wanted
to
have some crossover.
I wanted to secretly
plug your other podcast.
I respect that.
The 10th favorite, you said?
10th favorite. Yeah, I always say it's your new favorite or 10th favorite pro wrestling podcast.
Well, it takes 9 podcasts to beat you, right?
That's right. And you know what? And if you don't have 9, then it could be the 6th. It could be a 4th. It's kind of a sliding scale here. And, you look at sliding scales and you think about the way that your expectation of what a team's going to do in the draft, and it changes, right? Because as you're watching last night's draft board come together, you had to get excited as an Eagles fan because, quite frankly, they ended up with a guy who I think a lot of people, including Micah Parsons, who's very dejected, on a stream with my former co-host Adam Lefko. Micah Parsons thought that Quinyon Marshall, I've heard it both ways. I don't know if it's tomato, tomato. All right. Some people call me Russ. Some people call me Russell. Some people call me an asshole. But Quinyon Mitchell falls to them at 12. Falls to them at 22. People thought he could have gone in the top 12, maybe the top 15. The way that the board broke was honestly kind of wild. A lot of quarterbacks go off the board early, including Atlanta, making one of the weirdest picks, one of the most unexpected picks in quite some time. Drafting a quarterback after just giving Boku bucks and a ton of guaranteed money to Kirk Cousins, who said, I want to retire here. I want to finish my career in Atlanta. He's one bad ankle injury away from that actually coming to fruition. Tim, were you surprised at all? Before we get to the Eagles pick, were you surprised at how many QBs went off the board and how just offensively loaded the top of this draft was, which allowed Quinyon Mitchell to fall to the Eagles at 22?
Yeah, I think it worked out really well for the Birds. There was talk, there's always talk, it seems, of Howie Roseman trading up, and who knows how accurate these reports are before the draft. I think there's just a lot of smoke that gets thrown out. But he has shown in the past he will be proactive if they have a player that they like, going out and getting him and doing what it takes to get that player. In this case, they didn't have to do anything. And I think the board kind of going chalk very early on certainly helps that. And also 6 quarterbacks being taken in the first 12 picks, I would say 2 to 3 of whom were definite reaches where they were selected, helped the Birds out considerably. They ended up taking the first cornerback in the draft. So this was the guy who was the top of their board for that position. It's a position of need, and it's a position that's going to help them this year. Somebody's going to help them immediately this year. Make that defense better. I mean, it can't be worse. So
a fair point. the good thing I guess you have going for you here is obviously with the hiring of Vic Fangio, you have to assume that Mitchell is going to be a Vic Fangio guy, and you would obviously expect that that means that it's more likely than not he had significant input into this draft pick. There were people who thought that Chris Terry and Arnold, see what I did there? That was like a before and after on Wheel of Fortune, that Terry and Arnold might have been the better pick because he went to Alabama. You always get into this around the draft, right, Tim? Like, you get the people who say, guy played in power conference, guy played against the best of the best in college week in and week out, versus a guy like Mitchell who played for Toledo, didn't play that same level of competition. Nick Saban actually said on the ABC telecast that Mitchell's a guy that they tried to get to go into the transfer portal, but he remained loyal to Toledo, didn't want to leave, and wanted to uphold his commitment to that team, which is honestly kind of nice. And then he goes to Senior Bowl, and apparently Mike Tomlin, they were talking about it on WIP this morning, but apparently Mike Tomlin really pushed for somebody to take the lead, and Mitchell went to the front of the line and was the guy who's, you know, making every effort to shut down the best receivers at the Senior Bowl, and that he did so with regularity. So I don't know how much stock you put into it, Tim, between the competition week in and week out. Can Senior Bowl over-skew or really, you know, change a guy's standing too much? Is it overreactionary? Like, where do you land on it?
Well, Russ, as somebody who used to make a series of strategic financial investments on Mac football, I love Maction, love it. And I will tell you that defense is very much optional in a lot of those games. So to emerge as a plus defender in a system that may not be, you know, it's very clear he's not going to be, didn't play with the type of players he's going to be playing with when he gets to Philadelphia. And also the thing about MAC teams is they play four games of their schedule out of conference, and those games typically tend to be games that are going to earn money for the program. So that I remember, I watch a lot of Notre Dame football. They played Notre Dame very competitively, I think 2 years ago, almost beat them, frankly. And, you know, a break or two goes their way, might have gotten the win. They also played Ohio State. I believe they played Illinois. So he's had, he's gone up against Marvin Harrison. He's gone up against Notre Dame. You mentioned his performance at the Senior Bowl opened up eyes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of us, frankly, don't know anything about these prospects. You know, we don't. I mean, it really is one of those things where how much do you want to get invested in draft analysis and draft stuff? I personally can't do it. I've seen enough drafts where guys like, I hear about how great Sam Darnold's going to be, for example. This guy's now on his, like, fourth team now with the Vikings. Yeah. Vikings, the Niners, Panthers, the Jets. I mean, you know, he was supposed to be the prince who was promised, right, for the Jets. And then they drafted Zach Wilson.
Did he come back from the dead like the prince who was promised?
Yeah, they ruined Zach Wilson. They ruined Darnold. Aaron Rodgers may or may not be able to play this year. Who knows? I think he's going to play more than one game or one series. Yeah. But, you know, you never know.
It's interesting, though, because if you look at his measurables, right, like, and again, I'm not going to sit here and act like a draft expert, all right, but I think it was 2 years ago he had 33 pass deflections, had 5 interceptions. Last year those numbers were down, which I assume is just a byproduct of quarterbacks not wanting to throw his way. I think it was 25 deflections and only 1 interception. But, again, when you end up, and this is always assuming that you make the transition to the next level, they're using this pick on him because they think he's going to play immediately. They don't think that he's going to, you're not going to use a first round pick, even though it's a later first. You're not using that to have him be Darius Slay's backup. And to that end, there was actually a really encouraging thing. Craig, I don't know if you have this at the ready, but Darius Slay put out a tweet last night, and I would encourage you to pull this one up, but it was a quote tweet. There was a guy who asked Darius Slay on Twitter, hey, are you worried that this guy is coming for your job, right? Because we all know James Bradbury fell off a cliff last year. Darius Slay had some very iffy moments last year, and it very much looks like his best days are behind him. But Darius Slay had maybe one of the best responses you could if you're a veteran leader and a guy who had been voted a team captain. Craigles, I think, has it there at the ready now. Yep. He quote tweets this guy and says, I hope so. I'm here to make sure he's ready to go when my time is up. I mean, Tim, that you have to think that if if you're in the front office, if you're on that coaching staff, having one of your captains, having one of the guys that's perceived as a locker room leader, saying that and saying it publicly is probably a great thing. It definitely kills any murmurs that might exist that, like, oh, how's Darius Slay going to respond to this? Is he going to be pissed off? Is he going to want out? Like, I would think that that has to go over pretty well.
I agree. You know, it's got to be really strange this time of year for a veteran player where, you know, you're playing a game where your future is, frankly, no matter what your contract says, it's not guaranteed, unless you're James Bradbury and you're back here for another year, inexplicably. but, you know, your replacements are going to get – potential replacements are going to be selected. And the guy's, you know, first-round pick is going to have every opportunity to crack that lineup. Now, I think that, you know, Slay's position is assured for this year. You know, they need to have, you know, they're going to need to have two corners, right, to play the outside. I think Mitchell's more than capable of playing inside. Maybe they'll move Bradbury inside. They still have Avante Maddox. All of a sudden,
they still have CJGJ, who can be pretty versatile. They could play in the slot if they need to from time to time.
Oh, God, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. The kid from Georgia, Ringo.
Ringo. Yeah. Ringo, not Ringo Starr.
So I think it's a position that has some. I feel a lot better about the corner position today than I did yesterday.
Yeah.
For the Birds, I would think everyone else in the organization feels the same way. They should.
Yeah, 100%. And like, hey, look. I don't think we talked about it on this show, but like NFL reinstated what's his nuts, Isaiah Rodgers. So that's another guy in the secondary that's going to help, right? So like you look at all these things, and it's like, look, I think that if we're looking at needs for the remaining rounds this weekend, and the Eagles have a bunch of seconds, you have to think linebacker. Although I don't think you're getting a stud linebacker from this point on. I could be wrong. Again, I haven't done a million hours of film study. But just traditionally, the Eagles haven't drafted linebackers particularly high. They don't put a lot of emphasis on it. I'm not sure that Vic Fangio is going to make it a hill for him to die on in his first year as official defensive coordinator. Even though he has a lot of gravitas, and I'm sure that if he finds a guy, if he sees somebody that he thinks could be a starting linebacker on the team, great. Feels like they're still going to go back to the N'Kobe Dean well and hope that he somehow stays healthy and that him being undersized isn't going to be a factor. Good luck with all of that. And I think that they're probably going to target the O-line again, because what's the one position you can't lose if you're the Eagles this year? You need somebody who can back up a tackle, you know, specifically Elaine Johnson. It'd be great to have a tackle that you can bring in. You can have sit under the learning tree of both Lane Johnson and then also under Jeff Stoutland, obviously, as the coach. That to me is like a big need. If you can find a guy that you think could be, even if he's a little bit of a project, he doesn't need to start right away. I don't mind using a high pick on a guy that you think has significant upside. Jordan Mailata was a late pick, and he's blossomed into a sensational tackle and one of the highest paid at the position in the league. So I think that those probably are the top two positions they're going to look at. Do you see anything different? Is there another spot that you could see them getting cute? Will Howie get cute this weekend? What do you think?
Well, the Eagles historically have built their teams inside out. They invest heavily in the trenches. Best teams do, right? The guys who, you know, you're not going to know their names when they're drafted, more than likely, but you'll know their names 3 or 4 years from now when you're throwing the key blocks to keep your quarterback upright and enable him to make that deep throw to Devontae Smith or that throw to A.J. Brown for the touchdown. And, you know, those might be players that the casual viewer won't appreciate, but people who watch the game a little bit more deeply or enjoy it, you know, or have played it before, I think that they – appreciate that sort of philosophy, right? And it just makes sense financially. You have so much invested in Hurts. You need to keep him upright. And in order to do that, you got to have people who can block for him. And 100%. On the flip side, the easiest way to disrupt a team's offense is to get to the quarterback, speed up his timing, make him make a decision a split second before he wants to. And the fact that they couldn't do that at the end of the year is a big reason why they stuck.
Yeah,
right. They could not get to the quarterback with the consistency that they were getting to the quarterback earlier in the year.
I think I'm going to be a blind optimist in the hope that Vic Fangio, because of his track record, is going to be able to fix this team defensively, utilize players to their best attributes instead of, look, Sean Desai might have been a nice guy. Matt Patricia might have been a nice guy. Darius Slay probably doesn't think so, but he might have been a nice guy too. They might have been talented coaches. They might have been smart coaches. They might not have had the tools at their disposal. I mean, it's been no secret. Safety, they were thin. Linebacker, they had practically nothing to give. They ended up using Hassan Reddick out of position in coverage for whatever reason. So, like, I think that we can look at this pick and them taking a corner high, even though traditionally there have been some issues with corners in the first round, just league-wide. It doesn't it's not a position that I think translates particularly well across the board. I think that there's reason to believe that Mitchell's going to be a good player for them. 4.33 speed, 6 foot, 195 frame, so it's not like he's an undersized corner. He's incredibly quick. I saw people this is where I think it gets silly, though, Tim. Like, people going like, yeah, his arms are only he only has a 31-inch, you know, 31-inch, you know, wingspan or whatever. Or what the fuck is it? That's not wingspan. It's your arms or whatever. 31 inches. Instead of 32, not 33. I mean, I don't know. Does that make a difference? Maybe. Maybe somebody can, like, give me a reason, give me a percentage difference on deflections or something. But, like, can the guy high point a ball? Can the guy keep up with the best receivers in the division? Will he be able to shut down a CeeDee Lamb if you have to switch, or if Darius Slay, you know, for whatever reason, is getting burned by CeeDee Lamb in a game? Do you have a guy that can go up against him? Are you willing to throw him into the fire?
In order for you,
yeah,
can he play? That's it. All this other stuff is academic. Can he play? We'll find out in September. I think he can. I hope he can. And he's the best. He was the best corner not on Mel Kiper's board. I think he had the Cooper DeJean from Iowa at the top. But this
Mad Mel.
I go by Mad Mel, who had him number one in his board. And I think he fits perfectly. I agree with you on Fangio. I think he has the pedigree. He has the CV, right? The gravitas as well to get his team to buy into a style of play. And I think that is probably more important than anything else. Getting people to understand their assignments, you know, on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, ahead of the game, so that they don't look completely lost on Sunday, the way they did, frankly, when they made their coordinator switch. I think that was a really bad idea. It played itself out poorly. You know, they should have just let Desai go down with the ship. That's neither here nor there. But they won't have to worry about it this year. Fangio will be here for the year. I think he'll stabilize things. They didn't have the best unit in Miami, but they were decimated by injury. Yeah. I don't really count that against him. A lot of those guys also had a little bit of that South Beach flu that goes around down there.
A flu is an issue. It's an ailment. And so is Bell's palsy, which apparently Joel Embiid has been suffering through. And so let's get into the other big story in Philadelphia last night. That, of course, is your team, your town, your Philadelphia 76ers. They stuck it to the Knicks. The Knicks had a lot of fans at Wells Fargo Center. It wasn't quite as bad as Flyers Rangers last year, but it was bad, and it sounded bad on TV. And I did have a couple of people reach out on Twitter who said that they were at both games, that Rangers game that really did, I think, in some way, force a big change at the top of the Flyers organization because it was just such a disgrace. And then the game last night, and you look at it and you say, look, the Sixers did a good enough job. They had a bad third quarter. They had a great third quarter. But the Sixers' big thing last night is that when they created that separation in the third, they held on. And the Knicks hit some critical shots down the stretch. And it is still shocking to me just how clutch a guy like Josh Hart can be. It still shocks me to some extent. Just how good Jalen Brunson has become, how great he's become. Is he the best player to come out of Villanova in the last decade? You can make a case for Kyle Lowry, I guess, at some point, because Lowry was a very good player, remains an effective enough player. But Jalen Brunson, he's got a killer instinct. He's got the ability to hit shots from anywhere. Goes 3-7 from deep last night. If you're the Sixers, you needed a perfect storm through those first two games to kind of keep Brunson in check. You didn't walk away with a win. Last night, he goes off for 39 points, but you're able to keep them in check. And why? Because Joel Embiid, who comes out after the game, is suffering from Bell's palsy, like good old Jim Ross. You want to bring it back to wrestling for a little bit. The reason that he hasn't been able to blink that eye and why half of his face isn't, you know, wrinkling, why you're not seeing any real movement, why his mouth was kind of drooping on one side, is because he's been suffering from Bell's palsy. And Woj puts out a tweet where he says, well, they wanted to keep this private. He didn't want it to be a big distraction. And then Woj goes and puts it out to like 6 million followers on Twitter. So, you know, and Beat scores 50 points and he's got Bell's palsy. Yeah. Is the man human? I'm not so sure. What did you think last night watching Joel go off the way that he did over the course of that game?
Yeah, and that knee still isn't right. I mean, it might be repaired, but there's something. He just isn't the same defensively that he was pre-injury. I don't think he can protect the rim quite the same way. And what we also saw is he got into foul trouble early, frankly.
He should have been ejected.
He did a couple stupid things to get himself into foul trouble early. He couldn't play as aggressively as a result for a nice stretch of that time. I don't think he should have been ejected. I mean, I watched enough NBA in the early 90s when I was younger to think that I kind of wonder, you know, where some of the physicality is going in the game. Maybe it's for the better, but, I mean, some of these calls that are made today. I mean, the Knicks, I mean, they're flopping all over. They're like fish flopping all over the court. Hardenstein acting like he got shot when Joel did a swim move past him. Mm-hmm. And I think the knee may have inadvertently got into a delicate section of Hardenstein, but the way he reacted 10 seconds afterwards suggested to me that he wasn't actually hit hard in the nuts.
There were a couple of shots to the balls, though. Joel was like playing it very, very, he was living on dangerous grounds.
He played the heel.
There was the kick out too, where he took the jump shot and the leg came up. And that's a move that we've seen Draymond Green get suspended for and get ejected from games for. It didn't go to review. It was weird though. You watched the beginning of that game and there were three reviews in what felt like 45 seconds worth of game time, right? Where there was a flagrant. Or two flagrants, right? Weren't there two flagrants called in that time? And then there was a turnover.
Lowry got called for a flagrant when he, I think he hit DiVincenzo and got him on the side of the face. It was he was just trying to make a hard foul. He wasn't, I think it was a flagrant one.
Yeah, Rico points out on YouTube, DiVincenzo crying dirty when he mugged Oubre during the season was funny. If you remember, DiVincenzo had that play, I think it's about a month ago, right? Where he almost did like a leg twist to Oubre. He wrapped him up and actually spun him kind of near the knee. Like could have legitimately.
It's called a low single in wrestling.
It's called what?
Low single leg takedown. Or you have both legs. It would be a low double, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. So we keep bringing it back to wrestling today. I don't know how this is happening, but then Embiid goes and he pulls not exactly the same move. But he reaches up to an airborne player and grabs him around the legs. And I know that you don't think it could be a flagrant two and an ejection, but like I looked at it and I said, all right, based on what the criteria is and the propensity that these refs have for handing out flagrant ones for what looks like marginal contact at best in some cases, I looked at that and I said, look, if I'm not a Sixers fan, I'm calling for a flagrant two and an ejection. That is a reckless play. It is a genuinely stupid play. It is a play that your star player cannot make. It is one that puts your team in dire jeopardy of falling behind 0-3. And we have to be fair. The beginning of this game, Joel Embiid lost his cool. Multiple guys on the team did. But this was about as boneheaded of a start to a game that Joel Embiid has had. And it really felt like in the first few minutes of the game, not like he was looking to get himself tossed, but he wasn't playing a smart game. And Joel Embiid, for all of his flaws, there are times where you watch him and he can't assess a double team or he makes a questionable call and you go, shit, what's his basketball IQ? And then there are times last night where you're just like, where is he emotionally that he's so elevated and he's just letting everything get under his skin? I think he was lucky he wasn't thrown out. And it was almost like that was kind of like the jumping off point for him to kind of turn it around and really take all that negative energy, kind of pull it in, and then focus and harness, and then send it back out Hence, you get the 50-point performance where he's an absolutely dominant force.
Yeah. I mean, I try to, before I criticize anybody, try to remember that we're all human beings. Mm. We all can get emotional. Now, most of us don't have to worry about it being caught on television and being viewed by millions of people, especially whiny New York fans who are babies and very quickly are able to play the victim after enjoying, frankly, some horrendous officiating the first two games of the series. Mm-hmm. Just neither here nor there. However, I can understand why Joel's frustrated. These injuries, I mean, Bell's palsy. I mean, are you kidding me? What a this guy's luck is horrendous around the playoffs. He has the knee issue. It's an ongoing problem for him. Before he had that injury, he was on pace for an historic season. Yep. This guy just continues to get derailed by things like this. Then on top of that, they're playing a Knicks team that is a very tough team. They play a physical style. I think we saw in the first two games, and again last night, they grab jerseys. They engage very aggressively defensively. I'm sure he's getting, you know, hit, grabbed, all sorts of things. When he's on the offensive end, he's probably frustrated about it. Yeah. Not getting all the whistles that he wants. And does that justify his actions, especially as a leader on the team? Absolutely not. However, I can understand it. Does that make sense?
It does. I think it's just one of those things, though, where you come back to it and you say, like, I genuinely don't care what was being done to him or what was being said to him. You, at some point, as a leader on a team, cannot allow for these kind of breakdowns. You just can't. Like, it's easy to point to a guy like LeBron. LeBron flops a lot. LeBron bitches a lot. But you don't see LeBron lose his cool a lot. And when he does, it's a true outlier. Joel, though, has these moments. And I think it happens a few times a year where it gets to the level that it did last night. Where, like, if we're being honest and if we're thinking back to prior postseason runs and big games in the regular season, he does have these moments where, like, he's either getting jammed up, bottled up by the opposition, can't get anything going, and you can tell that it affects him emotionally, and he has a hard time. I think more than anything, when he's dominant, he's jovial, he's the big friendly giant that everybody wants him to be. When he runs into some legitimate opposition, there are times where he lets it get in his head, and then he becomes this kind of borderline emotional mess, and he starts to take stupid fouls that he shouldn't be, that he should know better than to. And then you have a moment like last night. Again, think about how different that game looks if he does get a flagrant two, if he does get ejected from the game, if there is a suspension for a game four. Like, think about all in that one moment, because he had been bottled up and he'd been having some issues, that one stupid play, and it's an inexcusable play. You don't grab a guy from the ground who's airborne and grab him by the legs. You just don't. It's a shitty thing to do. It's a genuinely reckless play to make. That's the kind of play, more than anything, that he cannot do. A star player cannot do. I don't see a way to excuse it. And I know some people were trying to last night. Yeah. But
did you see his justification? I think he had mentioned he was fearful that Mitchell was going to fall on top of him. Now, I didn't watch it frame by frame, but I think he grabbed Mitchell or tried to grab him before he jumped off the ground. And then, you know, so maybe that
matters.
It you know, people
roll,
are making
big
these
man.
Decisions.
Roll. Barrel roll.
Yeah, people are making these decisions in real time, mm-hmm. in split seconds. And we can't get into Embiid's head. This could just be a justification after the fact. I don't know. I'm sure he was frustrated. He's the leader of the team. They cannot win without him. We've seen that evidenced very clearly in the last 2 months. He can't do anything to jeopardize. If he wants to win the title this year or get close or win in this round, win a game, he needs to be in there. I'm sure he's aware of that. And if they lost him for any stretch of time for this series, it'd be over very quickly. I mean, they're not getting points from Tobias Harris, that's for sure.
Well, but I guess honestly, that is the question, though, is like, is this year a failure if they don't make a deep run? And I think that there have been a lot of years where you sit back and you say, like, there was one year, I think it was the bubble playoffs where they went into a series against Boston, and we all knew that it was a done deal. We just wanted the season to be over with. And they've had years like the year that they lost on the miracle shot by Kawhi, where he definitely traveled before he got that shot off, where you felt like this could be a title team. You look at this season, and I think even going into it, knowing that they were going to have to move James Harden, knowing that whatever they got back for James Harden wasn't going to be as impactful as a max player should be, and then seeing Joel go down like he did, having a knee injury, not ever really fully getting healthy, I think that it's fair to say that expectations among fans probably did change partway through the year, that it no longer felt like they need to get past the second round this year because everybody knows he's physically compromised. But now after seeing what he did, where he can put up 50 points while physically compromised, and knowing that in theory he might be right, that they are the better team, have your expectations of what this team should do, at least in this series, have they changed at all? Have you gone, I don't know where you were at before the series, at down 0-2, and now, have you wavered at all?
Well, I think the Knicks are a really good basketball team. They're tough. And to beat them, the Sixers are going to need to be tough. They were tough 47 minutes in game two. And I know there were some calls that, frankly, should have been made, but there were still points in that game that were under the Sixers' control. For example, calling a timeout when they couldn't get the ball, and Lowry couldn't get the ball inbounded instead of giving it to Maxey there. But things like that that were under their control that they didn't do that cost them that game. And that's just the way it goes in sports. You're not going to get the whistle all the time. You know, that's life, right? Yep.
100%.
I think if the Sixers don't win this, if the Sixers don't advance in the playoffs, if they, you know, again, have a premature exit, I think it's a team failure, but it's not a failure of Embiid's or Tyrese Maxey for that matter. Those two guys have shown up and played. They have definitely grabbed the mantle of the star player. Embiid's already had it, but I think Maxey's ascension this year, taking that next step, has been illuminating. And this, frankly, is this offseason, no matter what happens, is going to be a crossroads period, a pivotal period, a tipping point period for Daryl Morey, because the excuses are gone. This is his chance to build one last good team, I think, around Maxey and Embiid to get them over the hump. Morey has been, in his career, great at getting his teams to the mountaintop, but never on top of the mountain, right? They get so close to the summit.
They get to the summit.
Yeah. And maybe that's close. Maybe that's all a GM can do, is give you a chance. But I'm not sure if he's ever been able to get a team, you know, over the top, frankly. And, I remember there was one season there with the Rockets where they did have the Warriors on the ropes and Chris Paul got injured, and that really impeded their chances of winning that series.
It all fell apart. They probably should have beaten Golden State in that series.
That's obviously not on the GM, you know.
Yeah.
But during his Sixers tenure, he has, I think, proven time and again that he's been able to keep the team contending. But we want a champion here, right? And I think Embiid wants to be a champion. And in order to do that this offseason, they need to actually get some good players around Maxey and Embiid so they're not carrying the team. And we don't have these stretches where Embiid's off the court and they can't score anymore and they can't defend. It's outrageous. No other team with a star player like that has these stretches, right? The reason why the Nuggets are winning around Jokic in part is because when he is off the floor, they can survive, right? It's not a big deal that he's, you know, on the bench for a few minutes. Embiid goes on the bench and the team's in dire trouble every time, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to the difference in a team that has depth versus doesn't. Like, net rating is always the thing that you come back to with Embiid, even in the playoffs, where it's just like his on-off numbers are just so massively swung. I think a lot of cases it has been a depth issue. Like, even if you, like, Ford's not here, right? But Ford likes to throw his little shots on Twitter about, like, oh, look at the box score. And T from the from the 203, you know, points out, where's Ford at after a big Sixers win? In fairness, I'll give this to Ford. Usually the show's on a Thursday, and maybe he's very busy on a Friday. But it is a little bit suspicious that Ford, after a big Sixers win, isn't here to kind of sling his little arrows. But I'll play this game a little bit, though, Tim. Like, Sixers score 125 points on the night. Maxey and Embiid combined for 75 of those points. The rest of your team only scored 50. Now, we can look at Kelly Oubre, who fucking crashed his Lamborghini. We saw that. That news came out just before the game, and there you go. Ford yesterday during the game, you know, drops the box score and, you know, did the whole big thing. This is before they won, obviously. The Knicks were winning at the time that he sent this tweet. But, like, it still stands that the Sixers, I think, do have the ability and probably should win the series. I think it's totally within the realm of possibility that they could win three of the next four. They should win game four at home. You're going to have to steal one in New York. I'd prefer a game five than a game seven, but either way, should be able to pick up a win on the road. But it really does come down to the big man, and it comes down to Tyrese Maxey, who, as you mentioned, has been a standout. Kelly Oubre having a decent performance, putting up 15 points, 6 of 8 from the field, 2 of 4 from downtown. That's efficiency. Kyle Lowry didn't put up a ton of points, but he was all over the place. He was a pest like he always is. And then Campaign, who – isn't that funny, though, Campaign? And it's a campaign year. It's an election year. But Campaign going door to door – killing it for the Sixers last night. Made the most of his minutes. Puts up 11 points in 16 minutes. But I think, if I remember correctly, I think he had 10 points in 7 minutes of play.
Eight of those points were in the first 3 minutes of game action.
Yeah. So he was great. This quote, by the way, from Campaign is sensational. Energy costs nothing. I was pumping the crowd up tonight. We as humans feed off energy. We feed off confidence. Bench guys, that's our job. I love having fun. And the telecast noted this. I listened to the national telecast because, of course, I did.
To the local one. That's why I think we have differing opinions about that flagrant. They didn't spend any time at all really discussing Joel's getting a flagrant there, whether it be a one or two.
You watched the Homer cast. Commercial
break. Yeah, it was
The Homer cast is a problem.
Anyway, but, I didn't mean it to rails. But
from the national standpoint, you know, they kept coming back to role players and bench guys tend to play better at home. They play better with home cooking, and they did what you're supposed to do. But the guy who fucking no-showed again, 33 minutes for Tobias Harris. 8 points, 5 rebounds, $39 million man. What the actual fuck is this? You can't do anything now. It's too late. You could move him at the deadline. You could move him last offseason. He'll be gone after this year. But holy shit, Tim. Like, I can't remember there ever being a max player who has contributed so little to a team as Tobias Harris has. And, like, people could maybe make the case that, like, I'm biased or skewed or whatever because I have long been in the anti-Tobias Harris camp. There was a 3-month stretch that Craig, you know, called me out on Monday for being, you know, happy with what Tobias was providing at that time. But this ain't it. So the people who listen after the fact in the podcast feed, you don't get to see this visual, but Craig pulled up the game-by-game stats of Tobias Harris in the series so far. He's played at least 31 minutes in each game. His minutes actually went from 31 to 41 back down to 33. But his points are horrendous. 7 in game 1, 10 in game 2, 8 in game 3. The shooting efficiency is not horrible, just under 49% from the field. But it's everything else. And Craig highlights it, which means that Craig understands sports now, which he didn't when he first got hired for $200,000 instead of $385,000. But see how he rises in the ranks. 0 for 2 from downtown. What you don't see in the stats here is the shot selection. Tobias Harris's shot selection, like, there are moments where you can tell he's trying to get himself into some sort of rhythm where he kind of takes the one-two dribble to try to get himself in rhythm from the foul line, and he just fucking clanks the back of the rim. And you just, on a human level, I feel bad for the guy. I do. There's one part of me that is like everybody's angry uncle who calls into sports radio and is like, he's making $39 million, I don't feel bad for him. But on a human level, like, you have to feel like the guy would much rather be a contributor on this team than be the laughingstock and the guy that everybody hates when he plays the game of basketball. But, like, he doesn't do a lot to help your cause. He's not a defensive stalwart. He's decent enough. Like, he was good enough on the boards in the first two games. Last night, not as much. But like, Tim, what's the redeeming quality other than Tobias Harris is apparently a very nice guy who's well liked? Like, what beyond that?
All right.
What does he bring?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to make the case here. A case. It's going against every instinct I have. But let's see if I can do it. Okay. For one, let's think about how the Sixers run their offense and how often Harris is given a chance to make a play. I didn't watch Harris closely enough, but just generally, when Maxey and Embiid are on the floor, they do a lot of two-man game. They don't – sometimes when the ball goes to Embiid, it kind of just stays there. And I think that's part of the reason why sometimes their offense gets stagnated, because people are kind of watching and waiting for him to shoot instead of continuing to move. Which, you know, it works though, right? So I'm not – you know, it's not all the time. So it's not like a criticism, you know, it's frequent. But with Harris, I don't think they really run a lot of action for him. And it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Do you run an action for him when he's not going to score? But is he not scoring because you're not running action for him? So if they really wanted to, if they were concerned about getting him going and scoring 20 points, you know, contributing that offensively like that, they'd probably give him touches early, feed him early, get him to shoot early, give him to get his confidence up. That seems to be when he can you know, get rolling, is when he gets a lot of touches. I don't think you sacrifice the offense as it is now to try to get him going, because I don't know if it's worth it. He's basically turned into an energy player. I think he was pretty aggressive in crashing the boards, at least at times yesterday. He's obviously only had 5 on the stat sheet, so obviously he didn't light it up there. But a lot of this is just getting there, getting in position and fighting, and maybe you tip it to somebody else who gets the stat, but, you know, you were there, you battled.
Yeah.
Is $39 million a good investment for a glorified energy player? That's where that's where I can't defend any longer, right?
So, your defense only goes so far.
Yeah. He's been okay. I think he's risen to the occasion defensively at times, but there have also been horrendous just brain farts on his part where you can see he missed an assignment. He's running out to close out on a 3-point shooter that he was supposed to have. And he left, you know, forgot his assignment or whatever. And, you know, it hasn't been good enough. And I think the coach is seeing that. And if you notice, he was not in there in crunch time at the end of the game. Yeah. That's why he only played 33 minutes yesterday. They had Batum in there instead.
Do you know what the problem is though, Tim? The problem is Tobias Harris is not a bad basketball player. He's not a horrible basketball player. He plays in the NBA. He's gotten a significant contract that he will never be able to live up to. And from the moment the Sixers acquired him, and from the moment that we all knew they were going to bid against themselves and give him the max deal that no one else could, we all knew he was screwed. We all knew he had no chance to live up to it. I think it's fair to be disappointed in what he's provided, because he's not particularly great at anything. And for a guy that's taking up $39 million of your cap, if it's not a straight-up star player that could be there in his place, it's a couple of legitimate starters, or it's a couple of legitimate role players, so that you don't have to lean on a Buddy Hield who once again went 0-for from the field, including only taking one shot from deep in Game 3. It's not having to rely on Kyle Lowry to go out and put up points. The big thing that this Sixers team is going to have to figure out between now, whenever this run ends, and next season is how to better allocate that money. And whether it's going after a Paul George, which he's had injury issues, but man, I've always wanted Paul George on this team, and I do think he's a perfect fit alongside Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. Whether it's going after him or it's adding legitimate starter caliber players that can be relied upon game in and game out to get you 12 to 15 points per game or something in that realm, that's what the Sixers are going to have to figure out. In the meantime, they have to figure out how to mitigate some damage. They can't just bench Tobias. They can't just tie him with zip ties to the bench, right? He's still a valuable enough player, whether it's being an energy guy or whatever. I have to think that at some point, if you're Nick Nurse, you have to do the math in your head. Is it worth having him be out there as a starter who really isn't contributing from the field, but is the energy guy? Or are you maybe better off getting creative with your rotations and having him come off the bench. And in doing so, maybe you do give him advantageous matchups. He can exploit them. And then maybe he gains his confidence back from the field. Like, if the plan here is flip the series on its head, advance past the Knicks, take on whoever is left between the Bucks and the Pacers, your best chance might be to try to get Tobias Harris back in some sort of rhythm. Because I don't think you can keep going into games hoping for the Nick Batum game or hoping for the Cam Payne game or hoping for the Kyle Lowry turns back the clock game. At some point, Tobias is going to have to contribute or this team is absolutely dead to rights, no matter how many 50-point games Joel Embiid puts together.
Yeah, especially when they're getting nothing from Buddy Hield. I mean, nothing. They can't even put him in the game for a minute and get some quick offense. He's just ice cold, and it's unfortunate, but just another, you know, another setback.
The only good that's come out of that acquisition is seeing what he looks like with your team, seeing how he responds to the playoffs, and then not giving him the contract.
Yeah,
because I think a lot of teams, including the Sixers, probably would have looked at giving him a multi-year contract this year had he not been acquired, and like they probably could have overpaid for him, and then we would have found this disappointment next year. His drop-off has just been incredible, like in the worst way. And again, that's a guy who I think, in theory, fits the mold of what a Joel Embiid could use, a reliable shooter from deep who could use Embiid's gravity to create his own open shots. Like, it should work, and it's not.
Yeah, it's very strange. One other thing about Tobias, when he signed that contract, Elton Brand was the GM. Mm-hmm. Ben Simmons was the point guard, right? Guy couldn't shoot. They signed Al Horford. So their idea of what a championship team was then is much different than what the construction is now. Yeah. And he just doesn't seem to fit. And I don't know if he fit then either. Maybe they just thought maybe like he'd be a good pick and roll guy. I'm not going to try to pretend like I'm a Tobias Harris expert here, but if I recall, I mean, when he was coming in here, he was, you know, focal point of the offense when he was in Detroit and LA.
Yep.
And he was getting touches, and he just doesn't get them here. And, you know, this probably isn't a great fit for him financially. He's made out like a bandit, so I'm sure he shouldn't be upset. But wherever his next destination is, he's probably going to be, because he's picking it, if he's picking it for fit and for money. I heard Detroit was a possibility. You go back to Detroit, he'll probably be better, but yeah, it just doesn't quite work here. He's clearly not comfortable in the offense. This is going to be it, obviously, this off season, and it's probably for the best.
He very clearly is a good stats on a bad team guy. Yeah, like the league is full of those guys, you know? And he'll be successful. If he goes off to a team that has a lot lower expectations like a Detroit, that also does have a good head coach, right? Like maybe they're able to get him back on track. You know, Maybe. I wouldn't put a ton of money on it. But like, could I envision a scenario where maybe he figures it out? And that Monty Williams is maybe able to get him back on track. Maybe. I think Monty Williams is a good coach. I think he can get through to Tobias in some way. But Tobias just doesn't fit here. And so here's what I'm going to encourage people to do. I am not going to encourage a standing ovation for Tobias Harris. I'm not looking for Trey Turner 2.0. What I am hoping that people will do is they will remove all of the vitriol and the hatred in their heart that they may feel for how small Tobias Harris comes up in games. And I do hope that when he leaves, everybody just lets the hate and vitriol leave with him. You know, don't throw a million, you know, shots the guy's way on his way out of town. I think he knows it's over. We all know it's over. I think the team knows it's over. I think at some point as a fan base, I'm not just saying Philly, I think fans in general, when it falls apart like it has with him, there's no point in beating a dead horse. Like, it's done. When he's gone, like, he'll come back to town, he'll get booed. But, like, who cares? It's over. Like, this isn't even, like, one of those things, Tim, where, like, the Sixers got to last year with James Harden, and it was like, oh, will they, won't they sign him? Will Morey, won't Morey overpay to keep him? In the case of Tobias Harris, I don't think there's any sum of money that he would accept or that they would offer. They're like, if they offered him a max, he would take it. But like, I don't think that there's a compatible fit here where even if you said Tobias come back at $15 million, I think there's enough bad blood-ishness, there's enough bad feelings and enough acknowledgement on both sides that it just isn't working here, that I don't see him even taking that kind of deal. And if I'm the Sixers, I don't offer it.
No. I mean, we've all had jobs where we're like, man, I really hate this place. I got to get out of here. I just kind of feel like that's it for him. And every time that happens, too, like you run the risk of, you know, you losing your attention to detail, or, you know, he just kind of seems like a guy who's burnt out.
Yeah, where, he does.
And, you know, he's making $39 million. So it's
things it's could be worse.
This isn't coming from a place of sympathy necessarily. I'm just trying to understand what's going on, his lapses defensively and his inability to get going on offense. I'm not really worried about where he's going to be next year. I'm more worried about what the Sixers are going to do to replace that, you know, to basically fill out their roster, right, with that money that's now open. Obviously, they're going to be giving Maxey his due and his a substantial raise that he's earned.
Yeah.
So he'll be your second max player. The way the rules are now with the cap, I think – discourages the construction of these super duper teams where you have four stars or whatever, right? Yep. It seems like there's a movement now toward depth, which is a good thing. I think it makes, yep. I think it makes the league more interesting to have the talent dispersed a little more. And so the challenge is going to be, let's build a team around these two guys. Let's find maybe a third guy who can be on the floor when Embiid's off the floor, and you just have Maxey and this third guy, and they can, you know, keep the team afloat while Joel gets his rest, because we're going to need him. You know, I don't know how much tread's left on his tires. This might be, we might have one, two more years where this window's open before it slams shut. So let's,
it's so hard to know too, though, right? Like that's, and I think that's the other thing. And that maybe is the frustrating thing, or the most frustrating thing about the Joel Embiid era of the Sixers, is that he's very much like Kawhi Leonard. You have no idea what to expect year in and year out. You have no idea what to expect of when he's going to be available, when he's not. And so much of your cap is tied to him. So much of your success is tied to this one guy. And I think it was on Bill Simmons' show last week. I think it was him and Russillo. They were throwing out the idea of, if you're the Sixers in the offseason and a really good offer comes along for Joel Embiid, do you make the trade? And it's like, if you weigh the options, there's no way you ever get back enough value for a guy that can be an MVP or a guy who can be top two, top three in the league. You're never going to get the same value for that guy. So it's a matter of, do you try to take a given commodity in a younger star-ish guy and maybe a pick that you think physically is going to be more reliable, or do you run it back knowing damn well that this guy is never going to be fully healthy and just kind of take the lumps? And I think the Sixers will always fall into the second category because it's so hard to get a guy who can be an MVP caliber player. And if you get it right, and if the way the playoffs fall, like, and they've fallen for the Sixers this break where they wouldn't have to play Boston until the conference championship, you get a perfect run like this, a perfect way that it falls like this, anything can happen in the playoffs. That's where you need him to be healthy. It's just unfortunate in his career, he's never really been healthy for the playoffs.
Yeah. All that said, guy had an incredible game yesterday, even after the brain farts. The third quarter was absolutely insane. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a center knock down three-pointers. I mean, I think he had four in that quarter, and they were all in a really one particular stretch. Absolutely incredible. He and Maxey really drove that action in the third quarter. And that's the reason they won the game. They won the game because of Embiid and Maxey. 50 piece, 25 for Maxey, and contributions from campaign and others sealed the deal.
So let me get your prediction here on the way out, because they're obviously back at it again on Sunday for game four. I think it kind of sucks that it's not Saturday, but they play on Sunday afternoon at Wells Fargo Center. Where do you think this goes? Do the Sixers draw level in the series? Do the Knicks go back to MSG with a 3-1 lead? What do you think we'll be talking about on Monday morning?
I mean, I'm not confident because I think the Knicks are a really good team. I do believe that. I'm not sure if the Sixers are going to be able to. I hope they can match their toughness, especially with a couple of days off here. They're going to have to if they want to win. It's going to be a hard-fought win, no matter which way it goes. But I am going to think I'm going to go with the Sixers. They're going to even up this series, Game 5 at MSG. Unfortunately, I feel like we might be going 7. So it might be 2 more games up there. This feels like a 7-game series.
Yeah, I thought going into the series that there was a good chance it would go 7. And I think that the Knicks are a better team than people give them credit for. I love the idea of a Sixers-Knicks rivalry. I don't hate New York teams the way that a lot of people do. I don't like them. But I respect New York as a sports fan base. So I love when Philly and New York teams have two good teams and we go the distance. I think it's great. I would have loved Flyers-Rangers in the first round of the NHL playoffs. It's a shame it didn't happen. And I love this. I'm fine with the 7-game series because, in fairness, like I still don't see a path to them getting to the NBA Finals, getting past to Boston. So I'm happy to watch as much Sixers basketball as I can before the run comes to an end. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey will continue to take it to another level. Maybe Tobias does come off the bench, gets his confidence back. And all of a sudden, a week or two from now, we're talking about the Sixers having this really great playoff run, and now our sliding scale has changed to, well, they better make it a series against the Celtics, or dare I say they better get past whoever dethrones the Celtics before the conference finals. You know, we'll see.
Well, the Celtics are engaged in a battle with their nemesis, Miami. Miami just seems to have their number. They're just pests for whatever reason. I think Boston's going to win that series, especially with Jimmy Butler not in the lineup. I can't imagine if they it would be an ultimate choke job if they did lose. But Eric Spoelstra is a hell of a coach, and he'll make it tough on them. I think that could go be like a 5-6-game series where they really have to earn it.
Yeah.
The Sixers, if they win this series, they're going to have Indiana and Milwaukee. That'll be another tough series because I just don't think the Sixers have the depth to say definitively they're better. They're going to roll the floor with anybody, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the Eastern Conference is a pretty good conference. You know, like it's competitive 2 through 8 there. I think the Celtics are clearly the best team, and then there's a lot of really good teams behind them, Sixers being one of them. I think they, if Embiid were healthy the whole year, they would have been very clearly the 2 seed here and maybe playing something, a team like the Magic and, you know, maybe would have had it.
It'll be bananagrams, though. Like, if Indiana can somehow knock off the Bucks,
Indiana's a tough team, too, though. I mean, we saw how they played the Sixers. Sixers had a very tough time matching their speed. They play fast, which is a little bit different than the way the Knicks play. And they score. They don't really play the defense the Knicks do. So it'll be a whole different series. It'll be very exciting if it comes to pass. And then if we get Milwaukee, I mean, I guess I don't know what storylines can be written about that one. But maybe we'll find one or two involving a certain fake doctor.
I can't even do his voice, by the way. I don't know if you saw it. They're doing a FX has a series for Lawrence the Donald Fishburne. Sterling. For the Lawrence Fishburne is Doc Rivers. And I forget the actor's name, but Jay from Modern Family, Al Bundy, is playing Sterling. That show... That looks like chef's kiss. That looks like you can't miss watching that show. So I'm excited to see where that goes. But
it feels a lot like the OJ one they did.
It kind of does. Good.
Yeah. Kind of does. John Travolta.
Yeah. Thank you for hopping on the show, Tim. Big thank you to everybody who watched live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. We'll be back on Monday. Monday's going to be a fun show. I can promise you it'll be a fun show. One way or the other, either we're going to be talking about a big Sixers win in game 4 and a level series and what becomes a best of 3, or we'll be breaking down a shit show, in fairness. On Monday, if the Sixers lose Sunday, Monday's going to be rough, but we're going to get through it. And we'll have more picks to discuss when it comes to the Eagles draft. I will not sit on Monday and act like I have any idea who the guys they draft in the 6th and 7th round are. I will have no idea, but I'll try to put together some at least cogent analysis based on the analysis of other people, but I'll be honest about that. I'm not going to try to, I don't spin doctor the stuff, Tim. If I don't know shit, I don't say that I know the shit. I just say, all right, this is what I heard from whoever, right? We'll see. Monday should be a fun show. Big thank you to everybody who tuned in. Look forward to seeing all of you on Monday. Do us a favor. And Kevin at iRockPhilly over on YouTube, good man, said the show flew by. Kevin, thank you so much. Thanks, do us a favor. Subscribe on YouTube. Ring the little bell so you get notified whenever we go live with a show, this or Crossed Up or one of Pagan's Man on the Street videos, or if Kinker ever goes back to doing It's Always Soccer, if I don't even know if that's on the YouTube channel, but whatever. You like the video, you share the video, subscribe, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, YouTube Music, Amazon Music. Follow the show, Crossing Broadcast, everybody's favorite Philadelphia sports podcast. Even if it's not true, we're going to tell ourselves that. So big thank you to everybody. We will talk to all of you Monday at noon here on Crossing Broadcast.